Okay, this is the Living Legacy Project interview with Bethany Krull on July 26, 2012. So, Bethany, what inspired you to want to pursue a career in the arts?
I don't think I necessarily became inspired at a certain point. I think it always was sort of in me. I came from a really creative family. My grandfather was a woodworker and carpenter, and my mom was really artistic. My aunt was really artistic. And I was always most connected in school to my art teacher, so it was just something that I always did.
When did you first begin to explore ceramics?
I started taking ceramics in my junior year of high school, and that was it. I've done it consistently since then, which is maybe like, I don't know, like 12 or 13 years, something like that. Yeah. I know, I can't believe it. I feel really lucky that was... You know, I know so many people that have, you know, sort of switched careers or switched educational paths, and I was always, like, very, very straight. Mm-hmm. Ceramics, mm-hmm. Tunnel vision, ceramics.
What were some of the first methods you worked in with ceramics?
I think with clay, you always, like, I mean, you start with hand building, obviously, but then there's this, like, lure of the potter's wheel. So, you know, when I got to Buff State, I was really focused on that and did a lot of throwing and pottery and, you know, did the Allentown Art Festival and the Elmwood Art Festival with, like, shelves of pottery and maybe, like, one or two sculptures. But, you know, towards the end of my undergrad, I started really moving towards the more sculptural aspect of it. And then, you know, in grad school, you end up being, you know, sort of pushed out of your comfort, and so I moved even further into sculpture and changed a lot, but, you know, now it's pretty much strictly sculpture.
Can you talk about where you went to school?
My undergrad I got at Buffalo State College, which was amazing, and then I wasn't quite ready to leave my Western New York nest, and so I ended up going to RIT, which put me in a lot of debt, which is one of the regrets that I have, you know, as an artist. I just never thought about money, and I still don't really think about money. So the debt isn't even really real, but it's huge, and it's there, and, you know, I wish someone would have. Actually, my twin brother told me, he's like, so you're going to school, and you're going to pay this much money. Now, how much are you going to make when you get out? He's, like, so businessy. And I'm like, whatever, who cares? You know, so that, although the education was good, it is a regret to spend that much on an art education.
If you could have done it differently, what do you think you... just off the top of your head.
You know, I got into, like, every grad school that I applied for, so I should have gone to one that was less expensive, you know? But, at that point, I just wasn't ready to fly away, I guess. You know, and I did right after grad school, and I just wish that I would have just, you know, had the foresight to do it earlier. But, you know, I met my husband at RIT, so we always say that we're like, well, you know, we're in massive debt, but hey, we found each other, so that's really good.
Could you talk a little bit about what you experienced in a MFA program?
I think, you know, the one thing that I always thought about, at least my program, was that it was, like, very formulaic. And I've heard this from other people, too, that it's, like, there's a sense that, you know, it's, like, beat the student down. You know, it was, like, very militaristic, in my opinion. Like, you know, like, take your ego away and then maybe, like, give you a few little, like, morsels of confidence in what you're doing and bring it back. And, you know, in some ways, you know, during the time, I hated it. I was, like, crying every day. Like, and, I, you know, I was just, it was very, very difficult for me. But, you know, looking back at it, I think it was a really, really good experience. Because, you know, if you look at my work going into grad school versus the work going out, I mean, it just leapt forward, you know, in a period of 2 years really quickly. So even though it was, like, a super hard experience, like, looking back, I feel like it was kind of essential to my development. You know, so it was really good and really bad, and also me and my husband will always say, like, well, anything that we do after grad school is easy. So So that's a good thing. Like, life is way easier now.
Have you had any influential mentors?
As far as, I always look to, like, my early teachers as being, like, my true mentors, because even now I can kind of go back to them, and they're sort of still in my life. So Ann Perry Smith was my first ceramics teacher, my high school teacher. Robert Wood was my teacher at Buff State. He was amazing. You know, I still look at him as my mentor, because right now we're colleagues. I'm teaching in his program. And then Carol Townsend, she was one of my first teachers at Buff State. And then, you know, when I was in the studio and I was just like a little freshman, you know, Scott Losey and Brett Coppins, they were both in the studio with me, and they were super, super influential. And I always felt like they took me under their wing and really kind of helped to guide me and sort of show me the way. So as far as sculptors, I'm sort of enamored with the work of Beth Kavner Stichter. She does some really incredible clay sculpture, and she's actually doing a lot to sort of elevate the perception of our field within, like, the larger contemporary world of sculpture. So she's sort of my hero.
Yeah, can you talk, you know, ceramic and ceramicists have been in an interesting position within the fine arts world, and it does seem that sometimes it is a struggle to get recognized for the quality of the fine art that you produce.
I don't feel like I've ever encountered any discrimination, although there's, you know, certainly places where I feel my work wouldn't necessarily fit in. You know, I used to live in South Florida, and the art scene in Miami is super, like, super contemporary, conceptual sculpture, and, you know, I could never really picture myself fitting in that type of environment, but, you know, also, like, keeping up with what's sort of going on. I feel like, you know, our field is getting its 15 minutes. It's like coming up to that point right now. Like, it's becoming more fashionable. And hopefully it's, you know, more than 15 minutes, obviously. But, you know, just sort of keeping tabs on, you know, say Sculpture Magazine. You know, for years, you never saw anything that was clay in that magazine. And now you see it quite often, actually. So it's kind of nice. And I think our field is also, like, moving way beyond its roots in craft, although, you know, I'm like really proud of that word, and I don't prescribe to anything other than, you know, I make sculpture, but I'm a craftsman too, like, because I just have those roots, and I think all of us in ceramics really have those roots. But there's artists that are, you know, doing video and performance and still calling themselves ceramic artists, so it's like stretching its boundaries a lot in a lot of ways.
Western New York has really strong roots within the craft art movement. Do you think that influenced where you are now?
You know, I don't know. I feel like I almost feel like I'm kind of naive to, like, the larger world in some ways. So I don't know. I don't think so. I mean, maybe indirectly. I'm sure it did indirectly. I guess your teachers were influenced by things, but, like, I wouldn't necessarily, like, be able to pinpoint anything specifically for myself.
Could you talk about your art, why you create what you create? Could you talk about the totality of your work? What are some different stages you've gone through in your career, different themes you've seen?
Well, I guess undergrad, you know, the sculpture that I was making was really, it was really formal, and I was working with, like, these seed forms and sort of thinking about, like, layers and the unraveling of, you know, maybe the human consciousness and sort of representing it through these, like, like seed forms that were, like, opening and unraveling and, you know, having very different textures. And I think, you know, a lot of that was, at that point I was very much working to, like, teach my hands and, like, to understand the medium. So, like, conceptually things were very, I want to say, vague or maybe not as important as, like, the actual making. And then I went to grad school and was really kind of encouraged to, I guess, re-examine my past and sort of kind of understand, like, where my motivations were coming from. And I realized that, you know, thinking back to my childhood, I think I grew up in a very unique kind of situation where, you know, my father was a, or my grandfather was a farmer, and so we were like one of the first houses on our street in Lancaster, and he, you know, he had cows and pigs and chickens, so I had this like lifestyle of like running around outside and, you know, watching, you know, him milk the cows and you know, behead chickens, and we would eat them for dinner and like all of this stuff, which was, you know, like a really beautiful thing for a kid to grow up with. But also, as I was growing up, like, we had hay fields that were all around our house, and they got sold, and then suburb, like, developments got built in that area. So it went from being hay field to being, like, tons of houses. And so as I went to school, I made all these friends that lived in these, like, little, you know, box cookie-cutter houses that had, like, no backyards and just, like, a very different upbringing than what I had. And so I started, you know, really thinking about that and sort of just equating it to like our alienation from nature, which is happening in so many other aspects. And so my MFA exhibition was called Manifestations of Nature, which was really based upon me sort of like collecting like these little beautiful objects, and they tended to be really small and dead insects and like seeds and like these really beautiful forms that I always like, that I felt were being overlooked. And so then I began to sort of study the form and kind of scale things up so that they, you know, would be impossible to overlook. And just like an effort to sort of bring the viewer closer to nature by, you know, displaying these jars and putting each thing on like a little, they had their own little jar and a little stage, and presenting them like sort of scientifically to kind of evoke like, okay, examine these things. So that was my MFA. And then the next body of work that sort of evolved, I felt like I was making this work that was like really, it was very aesthetic. It was like, this is beautiful. This is a beautiful natural form, you know? And I felt like maybe it was a little like conceptually vapid or something, like I was talking about alienation from nature, but it wasn't, I guess I wanted it to be more, have like a bigger impact or something. So I started thinking about, you know, in this collection I have all these like dead insects, right? And it's really interesting. I don't kill anything, but you find like a dead fly or something, or like a dead beetle, and they all like, they're all on their backs, and they all like sort of fold their legs like really gracefully, and they're all sort of in the same position. So I started thinking about like the death of the insect by sort of like seeing all the like how similarly these things all end up, you know, formally, I guess. And then, you know, thinking about the connotation that most insects have in our society, at least, as being a pest, but like how ecologically essential they are. And so then thinking about the insect as a signal for like greater environmental devastation or something. So the body of work was called Signal, and basically what it was these white porcelain insects, dead on their backs, and I ended up pouring out liquid like slip clay, which is like really watery clay, pouring it out and then letting it crack. As it dried, it cracked just like the desert. So there were these like sort of desert landscapes with these dead insects that had like the quality of sun-bleached bone, and so that was sort of my, you know, trying to I guess be more I don't know what the word is, overt about what I was saying. And that was Signal. And then but then when I did that, I was like, oh, this is like way too didactic. Like, I don't want to be like so I don't know, you know what I mean. So then I was like, okay, well, let me re-examine this again. And, you know, I worked on that for a year, you know, like I felt like every year I was sort of trying to change things up. And so after I finished with Signal, I was like, okay, so like I'm thinking about this alienation from nature and, you know, the fact that we think we're, you know, as far as like our high, like we have this hierarchy where, you know, the human is at the top and everything else is below. And then, you know, thinking about how we're like so disconnected, but then also thinking like, wait a minute, we have this like super intimate connection with nature, but it's with our pets. And then thinking about how it's such a contrived thing, because we've sculpted these creatures into like totally different things, you know, like the wolf, through our selective breeding and genetic kind of modification has become like the Chihuahua and the Great Dane, you know, and so that's sort of where I'm at now with a body of work called Dominance and Affection. And so just thinking about, you know, how much we love these creatures that like are our companions, but then there's this overlying dominance, which is kind of essential for the relationship to work in a way.
Could you talk about your creative process as you work with the clay and with the materials?
I think I've sort of tried every single method. Like when I was doing manifestations of nature and making these like sort of blown up versions of these specimens that I've collected, I did a lot of coil building with a low fire clay. And at that point I was doing a lot of glaze research because I was trying to sort of emulate, you know, the surface that I was finding in my, in the model, the natural specimen that I was looking at. And then when I, actually the switch to porcelain happened because when I moved to that next body of work, Signal, I really wanted this like sun bleached bone, like kind of time and harsh climate sort of surface. And so then I moved to porcelain, and I was building those solid, and pretty much that's what I do now. I'll build armatures and sculpt solid, and once the whole piece is finished, then I slowly cut it apart and open it up and then hollow out the interior so that it, you know, it's like a quarter of an inch thick, and then put it back together and then hide all the seams and then dry it really slow. You know, the clay I'm using is, I love it. It's so beautiful. It's so, so white because I don't really use glaze. If I use glaze, it's like very selective application of like clear, so maybe the eyes look shiny or the fingernails, or you know, very selectively. So the clay has to be really white, but because it's so white, it makes it really finicky, so it has to dry like for a long time. Like I'll finish a piece and it'll dry for like over a month. I have to fire it really slowly and cool it really slowly just to sort of minimize the cracking that you get with porcelain. But I think the surface is worth it, you know. It's there's definitely been a learning curve with that clay. You know, I certainly had a lot of pieces that cracked a lot, you know, that weren't salvageable, but it's worth it now.
Yeah. The fact that you grew up in this region and stayed in this region and had this connection to the land, does that affect the art you create? Do you think you would make different art if you were living somewhere else?
Well, I actually, I grew up here, but I left for about 6 years. So when I was in South Florida, absolutely, yes to that question, because I graduated from RIT, and then I stayed at the Genesee Pottery and did a year-long residency there. And then me and my husband moved down to South Florida, so we were living in West Palm Beach for 2 years. And certainly, I mean, I was making... I ended up, thinking about it now, I ended up going back to the manifestations of nature sort of realm of working because I never even really thought about this till now, but like I had new things to collect. So I was like on the beach collecting shells and horseshoe crab molts and all of these different insects I was seeing. And so certainly it was affected by region, you know, especially with, you know, the collection of these natural objects. So I'd say, yeah, it's certainly influenced that. Now I think that, like, with the body of work that I'm working on now, it's not so dependent upon, you know, specific things that I'm picking up out of the environment. I feel like it's more of my research is something that's more like, I don't want to say universal, but like I feel like I'm looking at, you know, how we deal with companion animals in multiple countries, or you know, like as like a society as a whole, not necessarily like tied to one region really.
So research is a huge part of your creative process.
Mm-hmm.
Have you had any ideas that were a seed and started to research and realized, oh no, that's not going anywhere, or have your endeavors into research really just been a linear trajectory?
I mean, I can speak specifically to what I'm working on now. I moved down to Florida, and you know, I have two cats myself, so we moved down to Florida, and you know, when you're in Rochester and Buffalo, you feel like you're doing them a favor by keeping them inside because, oh, it's so cold out and look at how comfy you are and whatever. So then we moved down to Florida, and we were living in this neighborhood that had, like, so many stray cats. I mean, it's beautiful down there. They eat lizards. They're, like, happy outside. And so we had these two indoor cats that were, like, you know, sitting in the windows. And, you know, I remember we went to, like, some, like, arcade or something. I don't know what we were doing. But I won this little plastic frog, and I'm like, oh, here you go. And I gave it to my cat. And I'm like, oh, this is so fucked up. Like, I'm, you know, these cats are chasing lizards, and my cat is inside with a plastic frog. And I was like, this is horrible. So we ended up letting them outside. And so that's when I started, that was like the sort of turn from, you know, a different body of work to dominance and affection. And so at that point I was like, oh, I want to explore this, like, relationship that we have with companion animals and pets. And so then I started looking for materials, you know, from that point on. And I came across this book called Dominance and Affection, The Making of Pets, and it's written by Yifu Tuan. And that was, like, super inspirational. I mean, he talks about kind of our need for domination. He talks about, like, slaves, and he talks about, you know, how we can want to control water through, you know, fountains, and the interbreeding of goldfish, and all of these different things. So reading that book definitely spurred a lot of new things. Just recently I finished a book called Some We Love, Some We Hate, and Some We Eat by Hal Herzog, which is, you know, speaks about, like, the distinctions between the perceptions that we have of certain animals, like, you know, animals that we consider to be pets that we love, animals that we consider to be pests that we hate, and then, you know, animals that we eat. So, like, how our perceptions of these specific animals change, and how we sort of deal with all of these differing things within, you know, our like, total perception of nature or animals. So I do a lot of reading, but I also do a lot of just, like, looking. Like, I'll go to a pet store and be like, oh my God, like, this, you know, bejeweled, you know, bodysuit for a dog or whatever, and I find that funny, so maybe that will make its way into the work.
Is there anything else you'd like to say about, like, what you hope to achieve with your art?
You know, I definitely would like people, I guess, to sort of examine their own personal relationship with, you know, the natural world, I suppose. But, like, you know, just maybe, you know, I think about myself and how I sort of traverse through, like, a museum or a gallery or something, and you know, I'm not one to linger on things that don't interest me. So, you know, it would be nice if people, you know, thought enough of the work to sit with it for a minute, you know, maybe think about it, look at it for longer than 2 seconds. That'd be nice.
What are some things you've had to do to advance your career in the arts?
I think doing the residencies has been really good. You know, like I said, I did a residency in Rochester, and then I did move to Florida and did a residency in South Florida, where I met, you know, I met a lot of people in that scene, in the Miami scene, and, you know, exposed myself to, like, that whole region. Then I moved to right outside of Philly, did another residency there, went to Montana for a while for another residency. So, like, I feel like all of these, like, jumping around to these different regions and sort of getting to know kind of the artists in those areas, or, you know, the collectors in those areas, was really kind of really essential as far as, like, my exposure to, like, the larger world. And then, you know, I applied to a lot of shows, you know, nationally and internationally. You know, I've introduced myself to, you know, different galleries, nationally, internationally, trying to have, like, a really good web presence by, you know, having a good website and taking really good images of the work. But, I mean, I do think, like, out of all of it, I think that the biggest thing is, like, I made, like, a really strong commitment to my practice and to kind of furthering the evolution of the work, which I think is, like, the most important part of it, and not letting it become sidetracked for anything. And, you know, it's definitely, I don't know anything else, but I know it's a sacrifice, you know, like, I don't make money, I don't, you know what I mean? There's things that I don't do because I'm in the studio, and they don't necessarily feel like sacrifices to me, but, like, in comparison to, like, you know, maybe other people that I know, you know, it's like, 12-hour days is just, you know, it's like old hat, you know. And so I think that the commitment to the practice is probably the the biggest thing that I've done for my career.
When you've reached out to galleries for perhaps representation or something mm-hmm. like that, what does that look like?
Yeah, I've done a lot of sort of just kind of finding a gallery that I think might be fitting, or maybe there's a show that I think is fitting for my work, and just kind of approaching the person or the gallery directly. I've also sent packets out that, you know, kind of professional packets, you know, just with images or press or, you know, a resume, and just trying to expose myself to different galleries, which has resulted in, you know, shows and also rejection. I have to say that right now it seems that I've been lucky enough to have people contacting me lately, and a lot of that comes from just people that I know who referred me, or I do realize how much it is who you know. I'm represented right now by the Blue Leaf Gallery in Dublin, and she's actually taking me to a bunch of art fairs, and doing a really good job with my work. And she found out about me through a woman in South Florida who I had shown with. So I think it's a lot of other people who have worked with you vouching for your work or your personality or your professionalism. So I think at this point it's you know, I still sort of reach out to certain galleries, and there's a few that I'm still too chicken to reach out to, but you know, it just I think just getting to a point where you're confident in your work enough to just show it to somebody and hope they say yes.
Yeah. For your career, do you feel it was valuable to leave the region?
I think so, definitely. Absolutely. And even now, you know, I love Buffalo, and I've been showing in Buffalo, but you have to be all over the place, especially today. So I think that that leaving definitely helped me to establish myself in other places, and also to realize that, you know, you have to spread the work around for sure. You know, the internet makes that really easy, but there's, you know, nothing can really replace somebody, you know, seeing it in person. So, you know, I send work all over the place.
As an artist, do you have needs of the community, whatever community you're in, like needs that maybe are fulfilled sometimes or needs that aren't fulfilled but would help forward your career? And what are some of those needs?
You know, I think the biggest thing that artists needs is, you know, a genuine appreciation coming from the community, you know, whether that be them, you know, liking art enough to spend their disposable income on it and to be able to live with it in their own home and to find, you know, satisfaction in having, surrounding themselves with work, or, you know, attending performances or events. I do think that like a public interest is really important for the artist's career.
With where you're at now, what is going to help you advance your career? Like, ideal situation.
Oh my gosh. You know, like a slew of collectors knocking my door down. That would be it.
Pretty much. Yeah. That tends to be the one common denominator, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What advice do you have for emerging artists, for people maybe coming out of their undergraduate degrees looking forward?
I think the biggest thing is commitment to the work, for sure. Because, you know, in lean times, I think it can be easy just to, like, forgo that kind of lifestyle because, you know, you have a job or you want to get it. I mean, I think just staying like fully committed to that path and sacrificing certain things in order to stay with that path is the most important thing. But then on top of that, you know, making really good work and really always trying to push forward and to be innovative. And then once you make really good work, take really good images of the work. They have to be like top-notch, professional. And, you know, you have to have a web presence. You have to have a really good website. You have to apply for shows. You have to expose your work to like, you know, as big of an audience as possible, and that's actually like, that's a lot of commitment money wise. You know, I remember I've applied for a million shows that are like $30 a piece, and you know, in the beginning you get rejected from most of them, but you slowly start to build your resume, and you have to think about it as an investment, and you know, working towards exposure. And it's a big commitment, but you know, staying with it and doing all you can to make it happen, I guess. You got to work really hard, for sure.
What have you been able to support yourself with your art the whole time since you were in your MFA program?
Certainly not solely my art. I mean, I've been selling pretty consistently for a long time, but you know, I certainly have to supplement with, you know, teaching. You know, in every residency that I was at, I had a teaching job, whether it be, you know, teaching adults or teaching after-school arts programs for kids, which I loved. I've certainly always supplemented. In my earlier, like, high school, early college days, I was a waitress. So, you know, I've definitely worked, right, the whole time, always working. You know, because you sell a piece for $4,000, you only get $2,000, you know, and then you have to pay for shipping to the place. You know, it's definitely, I'm not self-sustaining on solely my artwork. And honestly, I don't necessarily, you know, even if I never am, I'm fine with that too. I mean, I really love the teaching aspect of my life. So I think even if I was self-sustaining, I'd still want to do that. So
do you have any advice for people who want to pursue teaching?
For me, you know, it was... I never took any teaching courses. As far as my field goes, if you have your MFA, you can teach. I just think as far as that goes, it's more about, you know, taking the time to really understand what it is you're doing. And it took time for me to figure out how to actually, like, articulate some of the things that I want to share with the students. So... I guess it's just like being dedicated to like the pursuit of being a good teacher is really important too, because I mean, you could be a great artist, but if you can't share it, then you're like, you're a great artist and a shitty teacher. And you know, I don't want to do anything half-assed. So I definitely spent a lot of time working that out too. So it's just time and dedication and wanting to do it, I guess.
Well, Bethany, thank you so much for coming and participating in the Living Legacy Project at the Birchfield Penny Art Center.
Thank you.